This episode is sponsored by Kasasa. Kasasa is a financial technology provider committed to driving real growth for community banks and credit unions to help them recapture market share. Since 2003, their branded retail products and expert consulting services have helped their clients attract, engage, and retain consumers nationwide. Today, over 600 community banks and credit unions rely on Kasasa to manage over $20 billion of core deposits. Learn more at offer.kasasa.com. Welcome back to the podcast powered by America's Credit Unions. I'm Yikeng Yang, Digital Media Design Specialist at America's Credit Unions. This episode, I am joined by CEO of Kasasa, Gabe Krajic. Our conversation around fintech includes topics ranging from CFIs needing to adapt to change, overcoming challenges like liquidity, how CFIs can strategically grow, and more. Enjoy. Hello, Gabe. Welcome to the podcast. Why don't you just get started with an introduction of yourself, Kasasa, and what you do there?
Yeah, I'm the CEO of Kasasa. My name is Gabe Krajic. And Kasasa helps community financial institutions grow strategically significant volumes of core deposits. And I'm talking like the kind of core deposits that you would expect, or total deposits you would expect rather, from a CD promotion, generating that from checking and savings accounts and doing it at an all-in cost that's about half of the alternatives. And we help community FIs do that with an all-inclusive kind of turnkey solution that makes sure the front line's ready to go, the marketing's ready to go, the product is designed to generate the bottom line result that they expect. And we have kind of a concierge type service model where a client director will guide the institution through the process every step of the way.
Great. What do you think is keeping CFI leaders up at night?
Well, what they're telling me is keeping them up right now is liquidity. It was easy to get deposits to fund all the loan growth that they needed, you know, about 18 months ago. And the market has just fundamentally changed. We saw, you know, over $1 trillion of liquidity just leave the marketplace over the course of last year. And deposits on average at most institutions shrank while they saw huge increases in time deposits, CDs, and consequently massive increases in cost of funds. So institutions today are looking for deposits to be able to continue to fund the balance sheet.
And let's do a quick kind of zoom in, zoom out type of questions here. So let's start with, what challenges do you see CFIs facing today?
Well, that's a big question. With regard to deposits, at the very least, to narrow it down, they face a lot of problems. I mean, one is that this is the fastest that the market rate has risen relative to the rate of cost of funds that's actually on the balance sheets of the institution. So in other words, they're promoting, you know, 5.5% CDs out there, but just, you know, 18 months ago, they had cost of funds that were well below 1% on average. And now we've seen that bump up by close to 200 basis points. So there's been this big change over time in just the funding cost, and having to react to that has been a big, big shift for a lot of institutions. Compounding that fact is that they've got more competition than they've ever had, and the competition is more sophisticated than it's ever been. Just look at the growth of the fintechs. Now more than 50% of checking accounts are opened as fintech checking accounts. The same is true for loans, by the way, which is just incredible. And so that is the market for the community FI, and it's just been sucked up by new competition as well as the continued threat of the mega banks. Put all of it together, and it's a tough road to hoe to go and find some new deposits and new consumers that say, I want to sign up at a local institution.
Yeah, and moving on to kind of the future, what challenges will you think they'll face in 5 to 10 years?
That's a hard question too, because if you're paying any attention to the pace of change of technology, predicting 5 to 10 years in the future, it's got a whole lot harder with AI in general. That said, I think that all community institutions are going to continue, and credit unions especially, are going to continue to face a point of differentiation challenge and awareness challenge. On the point of differentiation, as things move more and more towards the digital world, where, and it's not just like move more and more there. I mean, I've been predicting that things were going to go digital for darn near 20 years now. And it's like, look, it's all true that more than half the accounts are being opened this way. This is actually the way that it's going to be for the foreseeable future. But as things go more and more digital, for community FIs to create a point of difference that works whenever people look on it on a search engine, how do you create something about your institution that stands out when, you know, you go ask 1,000 credit unions, you know, what really makes them different. Most of them will cite their superior customer service. When you look at their product set, it's essentially the same product set. What's very difficult for that to win in a marketplace where everyone is optimizing towards the very best product set that they can go find a consumer segment that they can go target with that product and go win in that niche. Winning in that niche when your products are essentially the same as everyone else's and your differentiation is great customer service is just pretty darn difficult. And so I think that community FIs are going to continue to face competition from the mega banks. They're going to continue to face more competition from the fintechs, and that competition is going to become more sophisticated. And being a market generalist that differentiates on, you know, customer service and being local is going to continue to dwindle as a competitive advantage.
So let's move on to the conversation of growth. What kind of growth do you think CFIs need most right now?
Well, what they need is real growth, and what they're mostly getting is what we dubbed at Kasasa phantom growth. And phantom growth is just, you know, you could call it any type of deposit that's going to be gone in, you know, end of term for 10 basis points better down the road. Low relationship value, low loyalty, usually single deposit relationships. In most cases, that means they're out there promoting CDs. And I was alarmed. This happened about 12 months ago. I went into an institution, a client of ours. This was actually more like 16 months ago. And they had just started to see the pressure on their deposits. And they went out with a CD promotion. It was only at 4.26, I think it was at the time. And they were excited because in 30 days, it had $11.5 million in it, which for the size of this institution was a decent amount of deposits. And I peeled back the layer of the onions, pulling data off their call report. And I pointed out to them, I was like, y'all, only 1.5 million of that is incremental money. 10 million is just repriced from your existing balance sheet. So your funding cost on that $10 million went from a pre-state of about 80 basis points to a post-state of 4.26. And that reprice is tremendously expensive when it gets added to the cost of funds on the only incremental money, which was like $1.5 million. So it was very, very expensive funding. And what we did with that institution is flip it, where they made the high yield checking product that we offer, which I'll explain the economics on in a minute, but it's pretty fantastic how it works from a cost perspective. They made that their headline product. And since that, they, like all of our other clients that have followed that strategy, have seen way less pressure to keep out there with, you know, CD promotions to fill the deposit hole that was created by core deposits going and finding high rate opportunities to go put their money somewhere else. And so really what we try to focus on is not kind of this here today, gone tomorrow, low relationship value deposit growth, phantom growth, but how do you get that real core deposit growth that's going to stick with you for the long haul, that's way less rate sensitive? And how do you do it at a strategically significant enough volume that it makes a difference? Because if, you know, every credit union out there would say like, yeah, that's great to hear. If I could fill the entire balance sheet with free checking, I would, obviously. But that's not a realistic option. So how do you turn checking and savings accounts into CD style volumes of deposits and do it at half the cost? And that's what we've unpacked the formula on.
Yeah. And a question to kind of go off of that, isn't all growth good growth? Sometimes growth isn't always a good thing. Can you expand on that as it pertains to CFIs?
Well, I mean, I'm a believer that if you aren't growing, you're dying. So growth is better than the alternative. But no, I mean, obviously not all growth is created equal. You know, it's just like, you know, two people could weigh 250 pounds and be 6 feet tall. That's two very different people, depending on how much of that is muscle. And so in the same way, when we're working with our institutions, we want that to be healthy growth. We want it to be growth that helps them be nimble in the future, to continue to not face liquidity shortages, and to still have the optionality that if you need to do a CDs promotion because you need a nitrous spike of deposits, you're not doing that because it's the only option available to you and because you're bleeding core deposits. You're doing that because it's a strategic reason to expand the balance sheet. And so I don't think all growth is created equal. The real growth that's going to come from, you know, real consumers. And when you ask them where they bank, they're going to say the name of that credit union and they mean it for the long haul. That's just a fundamentally different type of growth.
And what can CFIs do to convince members that depositing with the CFI is better than with a top 10 national bank?
Well, you know, what's amazing is that if you ask 100 random people in America, and we did this first way back in 2008, we have tested it every year or so since then. The data is the same today as it was back then, virtually no movement. you ask 100 people who the good guys are, is it the mega banks or is it the local community institution? About 2/3 of them will say it's the local guys. And it doesn't really matter how you phrase that question. You can say like, who's going to abuse you on fees? Who's going to be a financial partner? Who will be there for you when you need them? All that kind of stuff. It's always about 2/3, 1/3 to the benefit of the local institution, which flies, you know, in harsh contrast with the market share data that has been declining like a cliff since the mid 90s, where you've seen, you know, back then community banks and credit unions had around 75% market share, and that's gone down collectively to, I think it's around 20 or less than now. And so how could 2/3 of people say they prefer these institutions that when they vote with their money, they don't bank with? And if you ask them that question and do the research, what they'll tell you is two things. One is, I don't know who they are. And we actually tested that here in Austin, Texas. We did a focus group and had 100 people come in and asked them to name one community bank. 100 people could not name one, which I was shocked. We asked them to name a credit union. There's a few credit unions here in town in Austin that advertise a lot. And those came up some of the time, but it was still a good 1/3 couldn't name a single credit union. So you have this big just lack of awareness that even they exist in the universe, that these smaller institutions are out there. But then when you say, but like, you know, they're out there, like, why don't you try to find them? That answer is the more powerful answer. That's the one where they say, I don't believe they'll have the products that are as good as the big guys. And if you think about that, like, think about what fintechs advertise, think about what mega banks advertise when they're out saying, come bank with us. It's always a technology feature. I mean, like, can you imagine Wells Fargo getting out there and saying, we have great customer service? People would laugh and be like, yeah, for all the accounts that, you know, you opened in my name that I didn't know about, I don't really believe this as a credible claim. So megabanks can't get out there and be like, we're all about customer service. You know, the jury's in on that and the consumers have decided they're not that great. But when they go and say, we have a great new technology feature, or a fintech says, we're going to get you paid 2 days early, then the consumer goes, well, I know how the world works. They have a lot of money to invest in R&D. These are the types of companies that would do that. So I believe that they would have the best banking experience, the best products. And consumers, you know, all things being equal in today's environment, they're doing their own research on the internet. They're looking for products first, and they're finding the very best products they can. And if a community FI is not on the radar of a consumer because the consumer doesn't know who they are, and, you know, God willing, they find the community FI, that local credit union. If the products don't stand toe-to-toe with what they can find from SoFi, you know, who's out there, I don't know what their latest rate is right now, but I know it was in the mid-4s last time I checked for their deposit rate. So if a consumer knows that's out there, then it's going to be really, really, really hard for a local FI to compete unless they have products that stand toe-to-toe with what the big guys have. So the solution is, you know, one, you got to make yourself known, which is a marketing challenge. And that's one of the things that we assist our clients on. But the more pivotal one is just have the right product, have the product that when the consumers look at it, they're going to say, yeah, that's looks like something that I would be excited to have, that would make me say, wow, I'd want to tell my friends, this is really, really cool. And in most instances, credit unions and community banks alike, they tend to lag the marketplace in terms of product innovation, and consumers have noticed.
Yeah, you may have partially answered this next question with what you just said, with CFIs need to be better with the marketing and the products they offer. What's the biggest threat that CFIs are overlooking?
First off, I don't think that most of them are overlooking it. What I'm about to say, I don't think there's a huge threat that they don't know about. I think that there is one that they are underestimating in general, and that's the pace of change. You know, they expect things to be at faster. I don't think that they expect how fast things could continue to change. You know, as the joke goes, innovation is moving faster than it ever has, and it's also the slowest it'll ever be. That really is true. And I believe that with AI and with the continued investment in fintech, even though we're seeing a lull in it right now, there's going to be a renormalization and there's going to be, you know, a new rebirth of, it's not like people are going to go back to banking with checking books and going into the branches. It's going to continue to shift to a completely digital user experience. And that is going to overwhelmingly favor the new entrants and the institutions that can invest in that digital experience and figuring out how to make yourself known and make yourself relevant when your source to that relevance has been geographic proximity for decades. That's a really tough transition to be able to make for most community FIs, most of which don't have product departments. You know, they don't have a product department in the sense that I would use that word the way, like at Bank of America, they would say, like, we need to create a new product to meet a consumer need. Like way back in the day when they created Keep the Change, there was somebody out there that said, hey, there's consumers that need help saving. We want to grow deposits. I could create a product that does that. And then they brought the product to market with great marketing, and they trained all the branches, and they put it on their website, and they tracked the profitability and all the stuff down the road. That's what a product department does. Community FIs don't have that function. And that function is going to be the critical success factor for financial services going forward as consumers continue to look for the very best products out there. And it gets easier and easier for them to find those products because there's so much profit in solving those problems. And so that threat, that pressure is like, there's not even a department at a community FI that does that. And so who does it? It's the CEO and the rest of the executive team get together and they look at what vendors sell them, and the vendors give them a piece of software and it does the thing that they said it does. But creating a real product out of that, creating a real feature, creating market differentiation where people would come bank with you because you've got this thing that seems different than what the other FIs have, that challenge is left to a team that in most credit unions, it's there's not enough people to go around. You got a bunch of people wearing too many hats, and it becomes a really difficult obstacle to surmount. And that's what I'm proud of at Kasasa that we do. It's like when we bring something to an FI, it's not a piece of software. It's not a new checking account that's going to make them more profitable, although it is that. It's the entire solution. It's, hey, we've done the market research. Here's the type of consumer that is going to be attracted to this product. We will help you do the market segmentation in your market. So we can say, here's who those consumers are and how you would find them, how you would market to them. And here's the marketing material. Train the whole staff, do all the compliance, pull all the data from the core processor to know what's working, what's not working all the time, and make real-time changes as market changes occur. You know, 18 months ago, we didn't think we'd be in a liquidity crisis. And when that occurred, we went out to all of our clients and offered them best practices on how to respond. And the ones that followed that guidance just absolutely crushed it in terms of beating the market and deposit growth. The entire market shrank about 60 basis points. I think I mentioned that earlier in terms of total deposits. Our clients grew 4.11%. They needed 2/3 less CDs, and their cost of funds went up 30% less than everybody else. So they were growing while others are shrinking, and they're doing it with less CDs. They're doing it with more core deposits, and all that means they're going to increase their cost of funds way less than everybody else. And that's everybody else who's going backwards while they're going forwards. So that's pretty compelling.
So let's say you become CEO of a CFI tomorrow. What are your first big moves for Q1 2024?
I would not even blink. I would switch all my deposit strategy to high yield checking and savings. That does not mean that I would get rid of CDs or that I would shut down every other product type, but it means that I'm aware, and this is after, you know, we manage a $20 billion portfolio of checking accounts for our FIs, and we've seen every strategy that they've tried doing different things to grow deposits, not just in our accounts, but in other types of accounts, CDs and other stuff. We can just quantify what works and doesn't work. And so I kind of come in with this extra knowledge from looking at that database for almost 20 years. And what I know for sure is that money moves like water moves downhill. Money moves to high interest rates. So where you put the high interest rate is where the deposits will begin to gravitate. And if people come in and they're going to ask, what's your highest rate product? And if the answer to that is a CD, that's where the money's going to go. If the answer to that is a high yield checking account, then that's where it's going to go. And when that money goes into a product like the kind that we design at Kasasa, it ends up being dramatically lower cost than it would have been in the CD, and I'll explain why. So I'm going to use an example that's pretty out there. Like, this is on the far extreme of what our clients are doing. It's not the highest rate that we have, but it's not uncommon either. So let's do a 6% free checking account, and that 6% would be earned in the way that we set it up when the consumer does certain monthly qualification criteria. For most folks, this is easy stuff, stuff that they already do whenever they bank at a place. So it's hard to do if you don't bank there, but it's easy to do if that's really your checking account. And it's stuff like use your debit card 10 times, have your direct deposit go there, and log into mobile or online banking at least once a month. That's not the only stuff we do, but it's things like that. And it's things that we know and we've proven over time that when you ask the consumer to do that light little stuff, you end up being the PFI and you end up getting a whole lot of other stuff, like way more loan cross sales, way more other types of products cross sales, way more engagement in online banking and e-statement adoption, much more profitable lifetime customer, a lot lower attrition. But the other component of that is because they have to meet the qualification criteria to earn that premium rate, not everybody does the stuff. Even I'm the CEO of the company and I've got, you know, me and my wife have Kasasa checking accounts. I don't qualify every month because I just forget to use my debit card. I'm using my credit card because I'm traveling that month, whatever the reason is. Forget to log into mobile banking. And so about a third of people fail to qualify. So you end up with this rate that goes out at 6, but your actual cost of funds just on people failing to qualify is closer to 4. But also that promoted rate of 6 is not paid on the entire balance. You know, it's not like you can have $1 million in there and still get 6% interest on the full million. We tier that interest rate and it's an inverted tier. So we pay the high rate on the lower portion of the balance. And a typical example would be pay 6% up to $25,000 and any portion of the balance above $25,000 has a lower rate. Those can be different, but you know, just use 1% as an example. And so when you put that in, that again decreases the cost of funds slightly because you're blending across those two rates and a material fraction of the balances will be above the cap. And we know exactly how much at different tiers and all that kind of stuff. And so if you started off with 6, you have a fail to qualify of about a third, you're now at 4% cost of funds. And then you know that some of that money is going to be above the cap and it's even lower now. It's going to be more like 3.5%. So you have a cost of funds of 3.5% with a promoted rate of 6. If I stopped right there, this is already a win. Why would you not rather new money go to that account? And I guarantee to you, if you go ask the member, what would you rather, a free checking account that pays 6% or a CD that pays 5? That's like an IQ test. And so, of course, they're going to prefer the checking account. Of course, the money is going to flow like water goes downhill into that product. And then you know that the actual cost of funds is going to be about 3.5%. So you're all day in the win. In addition to that, what makes it even better is because this is somebody's primary checking account, and we encourage that, they generate about 45% more non-interest income than a typical free checking account does. Most of that's driven by interchange because when you ask people to use the debit card 10 times, they end up using it more like 30 because nobody counts their debit card swipes. It just like becomes top of wallet, right? So you end up with all this interchange revenue and that further subsidizes the interest cost. And so cost of funds was 3.5, but if you count the non-interest income net of non-interest expense, net of our fees, if you count that, you know, kind of as a subsidizer to the interest cost and assume it as a percentage, that's like another 100 basis points. So 3.5% goes down to 2.5% all in cost on a 6% checking account. This is like a no-brainer. And that's why those FIs are growing deposits and their cost of funds is going up a fraction of everybody else. The best example of this, we had one FI that they knew what was up. It's MCT Credit Union. Thad Angel is the CEO. They're down in Southeast Texas. And way before anybody was talking about deposits, when nobody needed deposits, they said the only accounts that they would open were the Kasasa checking accounts. And they had Kasasa Cash, which is our high rate product, which I've been talking about. They also had cash back and some other stuff. So it wasn't just high yield, but they went all in on Kasasa, the only products they opened, and they were focusing on growing deposits as a stockpile for when they might need them one day. And they knew things would change eventually, like deposits aren't always easy. And they thought like, well, nobody thinks that it's time to go get them, let's go get them. And they went out and got them while the getting was good. And then everybody else needed deposits and they just had to barely respond. They are out there right now with a 6% high yield checking, but they're all in institutional cost of funds is less than 1%. The last time we saw it on a call report, it was 0.62. And that's the most recent call report. So to be at 0.62 in today's rate environment, it's like you did something different. And I can tell you what they did different. They went out with high yield checking before anybody thought they needed it. And now because those deposits are so stable and they've got the best deal in town, they're sitting a lot prettier than their competition.
So finally, is there anything TFIs can do to compete with neobanks when it comes to product development?
I think they can partner with companies like us that have their best interests at heart. You know, we're totally dedicated to the community FI space. We don't work with anybody else. We don't work with fintechs or mega banks. And look for a partner that really aligns their interest, their billing model, and everything about their business with creating value for them. I would encourage them to look for a partner that's not just delivering a technology solution, because people don't sign up for technology solutions. They get excited about features that they can understand. And that's a full go-to-market strategy that's required to get the consumer to have the eureka and go like, oh, I see why I want that. And that also, you know, entails knowing the right consumer and knowing what the message is going to be, how to roll out that product in the branch digitally, and then tracking it over the course of time, making it sure it's all compliant. And that kind of full turnkey approach is what I think differentiates us and has allowed us to achieve such great success. And we've heard that from a lot of our clients. And one I remember, you know, saying to us, you guys put the fin in fintech because you actually understand the world that we live in and can build the tools and solutions in a way that's not just theoretically cool in a fintechy kind of way, but is designed to be able to work in a community institution in the real world and drive real bottom line results.
Great. Were there any final thoughts you wanted to end with?
The time of easy deposit getting for community FIs, you know, not the least of which credit unions, that's over. It's over, you know, not just as a season, it's over forever. When you have more than half of the checking accounts in America being opened in fintechs, a whole new type of competitor has emerged. The mega banks are as big a threat as they've ever been, and it's going to be hard for community FIs to come up with the product innovation and the types of solutions for their consumers that allow them to remain competitive. And I just urge them to take it as a mission critical, like almost nothing is more important than being able to solidify the relationship that they have with their end members. If their member base gets asked where they bank and they don't say the name of that credit union, then I can guarantee you over the course of time, those deposits are not going to be theirs. And we've seen that it's not just the erosion of the checking account because the member closes the account and goes to a new institution. It's also the thousands of piranha of fintechs that are disintermediating little components of the member relationship where you get to keep the checking account and all the expense in serving that account. But it's essentially just a hollow vessel for fintech apps to connect to and that consumer to do all of their banking through third parties. And so I think that our solution, you know, it's not just I think it, it's I'm looking at millions of accounts and I'm looking at the product depth, the penetration, the engagement they have with the institutions, the increased life holder or account holder longevity with the institution, how sticky those deposits are. And I just feel like this ought to be a time where it's a call to arms for community FIs to go like, we've got to go win with these consumers. We've got to keep them engaged. We've got to have members that say they bank with us. And that means we've got to be committed to product innovation and solving the needs of the consumer and take those fintechs as real threats.
This episode is sponsored by Kasasa. Kasasa is a financial technology provider committed to driving real growth for community banks and credit unions to help them recapture market share. Since 2003, their branded retail products and expert consulting services have helped their clients attract, engage, and retain consumers nationwide. Today, over 600 community banks and credit unions rely on Kasasa to manage over $20 billion of core deposits. Learn more at offer.kasasa.com.